Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the 2020 Mindset Leadership Conference. I'm your host, Riley Jensen, and today I'm super excited to have who I consider to be a good friend of mine, and he's also the coach of a group called Team X Alpine right now, which is some of the more fantastic skiers here in North America and really around the world this team is from. And like I said, he's the coach of this team. He's my good friend. His name's Jim Shobrin. And Jim, welcome to our Mindset Conference.
Yeah, thanks, Riley. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
And I want to ask you just a little bit of details as far as like this team goes. So can you explain a little bit to us what Team X Alpine is, a little bit of the genesis of it and how it all works?
Yeah. So Team X Alpine is a small independent team. We have a number of top level racers. The idea was that there are a number of these teams around the world for men, teams where, you know, there are a lot of athletes out there who perform at a very high level, but for whatever reason, their national team doesn't support them, or they might be from a country that doesn't have a really robust national system. So some of the guys around the world from Belgium or the Netherlands or Denmark or Australia, you know, they're really good racers in the top 100 in the world, but they don't really have a national team structure. So they have to find a program that's independent to support them at the basically like the Continental Cup level, which is sort of like AAA ball, and then the World Cup level, which is like the big leagues. And we, you know, I've been working with athletes for, I think this the last year was my 22nd year coaching at all levels. But over the last 14 or 15 years, it's really been at what you would consider kind of the elite level or the elite development level with kind of 16 and over age group. And since 2006, I've been on the women's side the entire time, and nothing like those independent programs existed for women. So you'd see, you know, a great athlete from Croatia or Australia falling through the cracks. You'd also see a lot of athletes on the women's side who had a great work ethic and a ton of dedication and drive, with nowhere to land once they sort of aged out. Most of the criteria for national teams is a little different for men than women. And because of the physical maturation differences, they tend to select women at younger ages. So if a woman is 20 or 21 and they haven't made their national team, or they've made it but been kicked off, they don't have a home outside of maybe the NCAA programs. And so when you've got an elite athlete that you're trying to promote up into the World Cup or the upper echelons of the Continental Cup, it's really hard for them to find a home if they're not from a major ski racing nation, or if they're just a little bit behind the curve in their growth and development athletically. So that's how this thing started. Is I hadn't seen anything like this for women. I thought this could be a good home for, I thought we could make a good program for women and give it a shot. So that's really how this started.
I know some of your athletes have been winning on these tours, and they've been very, very successful. How many people at current do you have on the team, and what do you see this looking like in 5 years?
Yeah, so right now we have three people currently on the team. We've offered invitations to three more. We have a staff of three as well. The three athletes we have on the team currently are from Australia and the United States moving forward. In the past, we've had athletes from Canada, Norway, the US and Australia. Our invitations, actually, the three that are outstanding are all to Canadian athletes, as it turns out. It's just based off of kind of who has a need. Right now in Canada, the National Federation got into a pretty tough spot financially. And so they really don't have a national team below the World Cup level. So there are a lot of women in Canada who would make the U.S. ski team if they were Americans, or they'd make the German ski team if they were Germans, but they just don't have a team to be on. And so those are kind of the athletes we're working with And yeah, we've had been fortunate to do pretty well over the last couple of years. We're only 2 years old, but we've had a lot of firsts for a number of our athletes. First NORAM Cup wins, first World Cup starts, first top tens at a number of events like World Juniors or a NORAM level event, which is that kind of that AAA ball. And so that's what we're looking to kind of continue that trend. When we invited a few more athletes, we went a little deeper on the NORAM start list, so a little lower, because we'd like to start adding in some younger athletes again. When we first started, we kind of had four athletes. Two of them had been established. They were college graduates. Two of them were younger, just high school graduates. And now those high school graduates have really become elite athletes, ranked in the top 75 in the world. And so we're looking to take some of those people from the 200s or 250s and bring them up to that level as well. And so in 5 years, I don't think we'll ever be a huge team. I don't anticipate trying to build this into a team of 100 athletes or anything like that. I think this is our niche, that kind of elite development area. But I could see us being somewhere between 6 to 8 athletes on the women's side. And I wouldn't rule out maybe adding a men's side. It seems like a lot of the programs for men are heavily European based. And so I do think there is room for something like this in North America for men. But that's a long way out. I don't know if that's going to happen in 5 years or 2 years. But it's something we've thought about for sure.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So tell me a little bit about your background, where you're from, what your background was in skiing, and how you got started as a coach.
Yeah. So I grew up in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, born and raised there through college. I attended the University of Minnesota. I grew up, my dad had been a really strong Division I football player. My mom was a PE teacher, so I was around sports my whole life. I played everything you can imagine as a kid. I came to ski racing actually really late, not until I was just before I turned 15, actually, which is extremely late in our sport. Before that, I'd been a soccer player, hockey player, basketball player, everything you can imagine. That happened because I had an injury in hockey. My mom was convinced it would disrupt my bone growth if I kept playing and getting hit all the time. And so she said, well, I'll support you in something in the winter. It's just not going to be hockey anymore. And I had a couple friends who ski raced, and that's how I ended up doing it. We were on really tiny little hills in the Midwest. So I grew up at a place called Buck Hill, but that's also where Lindsey Vonn grew up. So she's the most famous person from Buck Hill, but there have been other World Cup winners that came from that little hill, because it's a unique little spot, really close to the city, ton of athletic people who like the outdoors, who like winter. And I think that's kind of what fostered the passion in the sport. Once I started, I never really achieved a super high level of success athletically in terms of my performance in ski racing. I actually did better in football and a few other things, but I loved it. I loved it more than anything else. And I think because I, came to it late, I was a little more mature when I came to it, and also had to figure things out quickly. I had to learn a lot in a short period of time. And it was the first time that I'd really had to think a lot about what I was doing in an athletic endeavor. When it came to like basketball as a little kid, when someone showed me what a shot looked like, I replicated it, and it didn't seem too hard, and it went pretty well. And, I didn't have to get into the minutiae or figure things out. And in ski racing, my coach and mentor at the time was this famous Austrian guy, but he never really explained things. He'd tell you what to do, but he didn't really explain how to do it. And so you had to fill in the gaps there. And that was really valuable for me in terms of having to think about something a different way. And I think that's what sort of led me into coaching. Once my ski racing career was over, after I was I was hurt more than Tua. So like, I mean, you could call me injury prone, and I always objected to that, but it's probably true. So after enough injuries that I really couldn't race competitively anymore. I knew I couldn't quit the sport cold turkey. And my coach said, hey, you know, we need a warm body with a strong back, you know, valid driver's license. How about you come out and help me out a little bit part-time while you're in school? And so I started coaching part-time in college. And then a couple years into it, I actually started coaching full-time while I was still in school because I was just so passionate about it. And as soon as I finished college, I had planned to go to med school, but I started that for about 3 months and it just didn't suit me compared to coaching. And I returned to coaching. I think I lost you, Riley. All right, I got you back.
Hey, sorry about that. I think it's still recording, but the part that it cut out on me was when you were talking about you were just about to go full time as a coach in college.
Oh, so, yeah. So so I started part time, shifted to full time, finished up school. I intended to pursue medicine and started med school for like 3 months, and then wasn't super happy where I was at. It was a pretty rough neighborhood, and just was not something I was used to as a kid from Minnesota. And it happened to be kind of fortuitous that my coach at the same time needed a head coach, because his current head coach had just left to take over a program in Colorado. And he said, I could use you if you're not doing anything. And I said, this is perfect. I would love to come back and become the head coach there. And that's kind of set me on the path that I'm on today.
So. That's awesome. That's awesome. As you've been going through the years and as you've been a coach at a high level with these elite athletes, what would you say your definition now is of mental toughness or mindset?
Oh, man. I think, I don't know if I have a single definition. It's one of those things I sort of know it when I see it. I think with mental toughness or mindset, you know, it's really when I, you know, obviously you can have a positive mindset or a negative mindset in my, you know, in the way I kind of think about it. But I think in general, when I speak about mindset, I speak about it in a positive frame of view, you know, about how to focus on the right things, how to make a plan and execute that plan and stay focused on that plan. You know, how to, if you've got basically an obstacle or a problem, how to work through it, you know, that sort of thing is kind of what I think about in terms of mindset. In terms of mental toughness, I think there's so, I've seen it in so many different ways. You know, I've seen it in athletes overcoming those obstacles, and those obstacles could be anything. It could be a breakup in the family. It could be an injury. It could be a tough stretch, you know, where for whatever reason, everything in training seems to be coming together. They can see the speed is there, but on race day, they're struggling to put it all together. And you know, that in ski racing, it's a pretty unforgiving sport because there are just so many variables. Nothing is ever the same. The hills aren't the same. The surface isn't the same. Sometimes it's soft. Sometimes it's slick and icy. Sometimes it's icy, but really grippy. It all changes how you approach it. And it's also, you know, the courses are never the same. You get to see a course once and then they change it on you and they move it on the hill even. And then a different part of the hill is different from, you know, one side of the hill is often different from another side of the hill. The light's changing, the weather's changing, the winds are, you know, everything is highly variable. So there isn't a lot that you can control as an athlete except for your mindset and except for how you prepare going into those events. And when you know that, and when you're having a tough stretch, it's hard to push through and stay tough mentally, because you really feel the burden of those performances more than anyone else. And so it's I think that's a big part of it. But yeah, I just really think it's you know, something, I don't remember if it was my pastor as a kid or John Wooden, because I was a huge Wooden fan, who said, you know, listen, all champions have to overcome obstacles. There's no linear path to becoming a champion. And not everyone's obstacles look the same. But if you want to be truly great, you're going to have to overcome obstacles. And to me, that's really kind of the heart of mental toughness, is doing the work it takes to overcome those obstacles, kind of no matter what that work looks like. Sometimes it's like the committee meetings I've been in that are pretty monotonous and boring and, you know, hard to churn through, but it's important that I do that as a program director so that I'm informed and prepared. And so that, you know, we have a voice in the room. And it's the same thing for the athletes. Sometimes it's as simple as just focusing on the right execution of that plank you're doing. You know, just breaking your process all the way down to that, because just doing that right is helping you become a better athlete more than if you cheated just a little bit on it or gave up 3 seconds early or whatever it might be. And sometimes it's more glamorous stuff. Sometimes it's, you know, you're having success and now you're having to meet with people to learn how to deal with the media because you've never had to do that before. And that's part of your process now. And, you know, so it could be all sorts of things, but kind of whatever is part of your plan that you need to do to execute and kind of make that next step on your plan. That to me is the mindset. And then overcoming the bumps in the road and staying committed to that plan is sort of the mental toughness aspect.
Yeah, I love that. That's really cool. Do you think that you've had to be mentally tough as a coach?
Yeah, more so now. Like, I didn't recognize it when I was younger. I think a lot of factors. I think age and experience for sure are huge. I think becoming a parent was huge. I've been really fortunate to work at great programs. Like, I grew up at Buck Hill, which is considered, I mean, it's a little tiny hill, but the number of champions have come from that place because of so many factors. Eric is a huge part of that, the program director there for, you know, 50 years. But so many other factors as well really was a luxury I didn't recognize at the time. And then I worked at Burke Mountain Academy, which is was the first ski academy in the United States. It's, you know, had all sorts of Olympians and World Cup winners and all this. Then I went with the U.S. ski team, then Remark Ski Academy, another incredible academy that's produced all sorts of Olympians and World Cup athletes. And so I've been really lucky to be around a lot of good people and learn a lot over 20 some years. And so that's kind of colored my perspective and how I view this. You know, I don't know if I understood mental toughness in the same way. I don't know if I could help people as well to become or stay mentally tough when I was younger. I could grind out anything. My work capacity, you know, I could work 20 hours a day for 6 weeks straight, tirelessly, no matter what the results looked like, because I just had so much energy and passion. Now it's a little different. Now I don't have as much energy and I'm pulled in different directions, but my message is much more focused and I think much more well-informed, much better informed. And so I'm not throwing as many darts at the wall, hoping I hit the bullseye. I know that I'm in the ballpark a little closer now. And you know, it's really interesting, I think, to work with the elite athletes because a lot of them have had so much mental toughness. It's interesting to see, you know, where they struggle, and it's all across the map. It's not necessarily the same for every elite athlete, but you know, it takes a little more of my time now to be, I think, more encouraging and more positive among the elite athletes because they tend to be so good at picking apart everything they're doing. They tend to have such high expectations. You know, those aspects seem to make them harder on themselves than when I first started coaching and I was working with anyone from age 5 to 85. And so much of it was about experiencing, you know, a winter sport in a fun way. There are many of the athletes were hugely competitive. Some made this national team, some made Division I teams, but it was a much different atmosphere.
Right.
And so a lot of the mental toughness, if I did anything to help it, it was incidental. It wasn't intentional. And now it's much more intentional on my part. I know how much I recognize how valuable it is, how much mindset plays a role in their execution overall, in their happiness, in their outcomes. You know, and so now I spend a lot more of my time focusing my energy there compared to when I was a younger coach.
How does failure help an athlete? How does it help you? How does failure work?
I think it depends a lot on the athlete. and their mindset, and the message they're getting from their coaching staff and their teammates, and the people they work with. For me, and the way I typically frame it with athletes is, it feels awesome when you're succeeding, but you're really not learning that much. You're just kind of going through the motions a lot of times, and because you've done the work, right? You kind of, things are innate there, in that learning process, it's become automatic, that unconsciously automatic, skill. And that's great, but you don't have to think about it a whole lot. And so it's not bad, but you're probably not growing much as an athlete. It's in the failures, when you're trying to figure out what's going on, that you actually take the time to sit down and say, okay, what I'm doing the wrong thing right now? I mean, maybe it's not. It might not be exactly the reason you're going. Maybe it's time to look and say, okay, yes, I've asked all the questions. I've looked at what's going on, but we just need to stay the course. We just need to trust that what we're doing is the right thing and see it through and have some patience. Other times you can look and see, what am I really doing here? All this tracking of our loads and our, activities we're doing, all our different skills that we're working on, the progressions to do those, the drills we've tried, the courses we've set, the hills we've been on, have those been the right thing? Those seemed like the right thing when we planned them out. Did something change? Whatever. And you can learn really how to build a better warm-up plan for yourself, how to build a better drill that'll develop a skill better for an athlete who needs it. It's not just me. I think a lot of ski coaches, and I'm 100% sure a lot of other sport coaches have invented their own drills because they were trying to get a certain response out of either one athlete or a group of athletes who were struggling with a specific task. And usually you don't figure out that drill that you've invented unless those athletes are struggling, right? And the athlete typically isn't eager to try some crazy new thing if everything's going really well. And so it's usually in those failures that they figure out a really good path forward. I think I lost you again, Riley. Yeah, I got you back here.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah, so I was just saying, I think it's in the failures that you figure out that really good path forward, refine that, and athletes are willing to tackle a new drill. Coaches figure out, okay, we're all having a challenge with this. Why is that? How can I help that? How can I improve that? And you come up with creative solutions or elegant solutions to challenges,
Yeah, I love it. Who is there a coach or a place that stands out to where your mindset or your mental toughness was developed?
I mean, yeah, like definitely Eric Seiler. There's no question. I worked with a lot of great coaches in all sorts of sports, but Eric was a master of mindset, for sure. And we didn't know it. We didn't know he was trying to do that for us or help us with that. But, he would even employ reverse psychology without us recognizing it, which is pretty challenging, he knew how to get us really, focused and driven toward our purpose, and each person individually. He didn't coach us or talk to us all exactly the same. He really focused on the individual within the team. Sorry, I got you. You must cut out again.
Yeah, sorry. Let me try that again. If I have to, I can doctor up this video.
Yeah, no problem. I feel bad for you. It's just more work for you after the fact.
Yeah, no, I should be able to figure it out because I think it records your answers. But the part where I cut out is just a coach or somebody who stands out as someone that maybe helped you with mental toughness or mindset.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't probably recognize it at the time, but I really think Eric Seiler was a huge part of that. I think partly because of the year, you know, was in adolescence, he was such a formative part of my life. I didn't recognize at the time that he was doing so much for me from a mindset standpoint and a mental toughness standpoint, but he really is like the maestro when it comes to that stuff. He interacted with each of us in a different way. He definitely
is this
sort
the
of,
Austrian, sorry to interrupt. Is this yeah. the Austrian coach when you're 15?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's a legend, you know, he's been like the Olympic Committee coach of the year, not, you know, for all sports kind of thing. Not just for skiing. And he's been the US, you know, skiing domestic and international coach of the year. He's won all the awards he can win. He's in the Hall of Fame. But I don't think at the time I understood what he was doing for me or for all of us. But in retrospect, it's like really clear how much he put into each of us to try to get the most out of us and how much he focused on like certain things with each of us from a mental, you know, standpoint. I don't know if he would necessarily, I don't know if he considered it mental toughness or mindset. I don't know. I've never directly spoken with him about how he thought about it, but that's definitely what he was doing, you know? And so it was pretty cool, you know, and like, he would even use reverse psychology, which, you know, 99 times out of 100 as an athlete, especially an older athlete, you see right through. Like, he just knew how to do it. So he'd do it to all of us at different times. I was like, man, I'm going to show that guy I can do this, you know? Yeah. And it was crazy because that's not a tactic I've ever used. I can tell you right now, I'm not skilled enough.
Well, it's hard to use it because, like you said, athletes can see through it, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I've never done that because I don't feel – for me that would be a successful approach, but for him it was an incredible tool, you know, and he didn't use it often. He knew the exact moments, you know, and a lot of times I think he did it to get your mind off of something else. You know, you were probably, you know, feeling all this pressure. Like I remember one time he did it with me and it was on this easy hill and I would think I was sitting in like fourth or fifth place, which for me was really good. You know, like being in the top 10 after the first run was really good for me. And, you know, he told me like, ah, man, this course is really, really tough. I don't think you can make it. It's getting beat up because, you know, once you've done well on the first run, you have to run farther back on the second run because they flip it to make it more exciting for the spectators, right? They want the people farther back to have a better chance on a clean course. And I'm like, man, on this Patty Cake Hill, what are you talking? I can't make it. Are you kidding? You know, I got all fired up and I crushed it and I didn't win, but I think I was second or third. I moved up and he stuck. The other thing is he stuck with it all the way. He didn't say, well, I was just messing with you. Like, right. You know, I got to the finish area and he's like, well, I really didn't think you would make it. You know, I really didn't think you were going to make it. You know, he stayed with it. And like little, something little like that made all the difference to that being successful, you know, because it didn't hurt our trust in him, you know, it didn't,
right.
Didn't undermine that. And at the same time, kind of once he saw it through and you realized what he'd just done, you also recognized he really had your best interest at heart. You know, he wasn't trying to tell you he didn't believe in you. He really wanted you to kind of rise above and get that determination to be tough in that scenario, you know?
Yeah.
And so as I've gotten older, you know, I've only appreciated him more and more for those sorts of little pearls and nuggets along the way, you know, that as a 17-year-old boy, you know, I, you know, he felt like my father, right? And so I didn't always recognize like all of the things he was doing and all the skills he was using and what that meant for me and what kind of energy it took from him to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome stuff. Let's get to the last two questions here. This has been great. This is great insight. What advice would you give to yourself as a coach 20 years ago?
Oh man, I think one of the first things I would say is just, you have to remember that you're in it. Like, I don't know a single athletic coach who's in it for any reason other than how much they love the sport and they love, I mean, that's kind of number one generally. And number two is they love working with people, you know, and they care about people. And I think one thing that's really been important for me to remember, even at the elite level, but especially at lower levels, like with high school athletes, is that it's highly unlikely they're going to love the sport as much as you do. And so you have to, even when I was a young coach, I kind of was cognizant of that because it helped me be patient and keep perspective, so that I could give each of those athletes, even the ones who maybe didn't love it as much as I did, kind of the right feedback and the right direction. Because, you know, someone who's not into it to be a World Cup champion still might be into it for a lot of great reasons. But you can't always expect them to have a champion's mindset, to have mental toughness, to have a lot of those skills, or to approach things the same way. So understanding that helps you develop those skills better than if you didn't recognize that, I think. Kind of meeting them where they're at a little bit and trying to grow from where they're at and given their effort level is really important. I think also just staying really hungry for knowledge, you know, and trying to surround yourself with people who either know more than you, which especially when I was young was basically everyone, or know things in a different way or know different things entirely so that you can keep growing and having conversations that help you improve, so you can be better for your athletes. You know, I think those are kind of two of the biggest things for me in my career that have really, really helped. And as a young coach starting out, those would be two of the biggest, I think.
Yeah, that's awesome. That growth mindset just keeps coming up over and over and over with a lot of the coaches that I'm talking to, and just really in my own personal life, just continuing to grow and learn and kind of bob and weave with the different things and being okay with that process, right?
Yeah.
The ups and the downs.
Yeah. I mean, when I was pretty young in coaching, I remember saying, like, if there's a time where I feel like I've stopped learning in this sport, like that's probably when I'll want to quit. You know, I'm always figuring out new things. I'm always learning new things. That's part of what I love about it. And I think that's part of why people stay in it in any profession, really. You know, I think, if something becomes really monotonous, it's hard. It makes it way harder to stay engaged. That takes some serious mental toughness, you know, if you're not learning and growing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. So we're amidst this, this COVID-19 and this, this coronavirus, pandemic right now. And I guess the last question that I have for you is just anything that you've learned over the last 22 years or over your time coaching and playing sports that might be of hope or might be, of particular importance to anybody that might be listening to this interview right now?
You know, I don't know if I have any great words of wisdom. I can say that, you know, it's a kind of unique scenario where everyone's kind of stuck in the same spot. It's hard to feel like anyone's getting ahead of you or you're getting ahead of anyone else. It's hard to engage with your athletes the same way with that same personal feeling. But everyone's facing that. So it's kind of like learning through failures that you know, we talked about earlier. You just kind of have to look at the situation we're placed in and try to come up with solutions to best help your athletes. You know, I don't have all the answers, and I'm our team is trying to, you know, when we see a good idea, we're not afraid to steal it. You know, whether if we see someone doing something cool on, sorry, you still there?
Yeah. Yeah. So the part you cut out on me, you said it's a unique situation.
Yeah, I was just saying it's a unique situation where, you know, so many people are sort of stuck in the same spot, isolated or, you know, physically distanced or whatever. And so it's kind of like those, you know, learning in times of failure that we talked about earlier, where you're having to take this challenge and learn how to, you know, interact with your team in a different way, but still get traction, still, you know, reinforce that mindset and foster that mental toughness. And like I said, I think you lost this part of it, but we're not afraid to steal good ideas. You know, when we see them on, you know, from someone like you on Instagram or from friends or whatever, you know, I've been talking to a lot of my peers and mentors and friends in the sport and asking them what they're doing. And a lot of us are doing a lot of the same things with these Zoom meetings. We're doing workouts together and core. We're trying to keep really active on our group texts, you know, and stuff like that, just to keep everyone engaged on the team and asking what people are up to. But at the same time, you know, some of our workouts are, you know, fine. They're fun to do and we're doing them on camera and the coaches have joined in as well so that we can all kind of feel that communal, you know, that sense of community within the team and that we're all in it together. Coaches are willing to suffer a little bit too. But we also have some other things, like we're trying to do some fun challenges and not always physically demanding challenges, you know, like learning how to play a certain song on the piano or trying to learn a handstand for the first time or, you know, how to use a jigsaw. Like we're coming up with all sorts of different skills that we can build a progression for, build some practice for, and learn how to get better in hopes that that'll help the athletes learn how to think about their ski training and their athletic training a little differently and build good progressions and good plans there as well.
Hey, sorry, Jim.
Yeah, no worries.
So I think I'm going to be able to clean this up on the video, but I'm just going to leave your answer there at the end. I think that was probably fantastic. I just wanted to personally thank you. I do consider you a friend. I've had a blast working with you, with your coaches, and with obviously the athletes that are on Team X Alpine. And you know, we wish you continued success going forward. We wish you and your family to be safe. And, man, we just appreciate you taking a little bit of time with us today.
Yeah, no, and I think this is awesome what you're putting together here. It's, you know, I'm excited to watch a number of these episodes because there are a lot of coaches that I think I can learn from. That's the other thing I would probably, going back to your question about, you know, what would you say to a young coach? It's don't be afraid to look outside of your sport to learn from people. You know, for me, John Wooden was a big one, right? But there were others, like Bill Walsh was a big one for me. He was kind of before Belichick, he was the guy, right, in football. And so,
yeah,
you know, those kinds of, like, people get really tunnel vision views of within their own sport, and they kind of think their sport is unique and they're on their own little world, but really so many of these things apply to so many sports, and you can take a lot from those. And so I think this is super cool what you're doing, and we're excited to keep working with you, and I hope you guys are staying safe and healthy.
Yeah, we're doing our best. I like what you say about reaching outside of the box, outside of your sport. There was a basketball coach for Portland State that was interviewed, and he loves studying college football coaches, and he has an offensive coordinator and a defense coordinator on his basketball team, which is a little bit unique, right? And he goes, I'm kind of surprised that we don't have more people doing that, right?
Yeah.
He goes, and that totally came from stealing from another sport. So I love it. I love the growth mindset. And I'm super excited to see what the future brings with Team X Alpine. So once again, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you real quick.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Riley.
Okay, man. Take care.
Yeah, you too.